Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from The Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Weird House Cinema. This is Rob Lamb.
And this is Joe McCormick.
And we are going to the year 1983 for this one. We're going to be discussing a film that has many names. Its primary title in the United States is Extraterrestrial Visitors, but it is also widely known to Mystery Science Theater 3000 fans as Pod People.
Strangely, that title has nothing to do with the contents of the movie and makes it sound like it's a ripoff of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, when in fact it's a ripoff of E.T., but with much grislier elements.
Yeah, it's my rough understanding of this film is that it may have originally started as your basic killer creature in the woods sort of fare, but this is the year after E.T. Cute aliens being befriended by children is big business, and so this gets folded into the plot. So it's one of these films that, much like the film Gremlins, it's tonally inconsistent. Like, it, one second it's doing cute stuff, and the next second it is in horror mode. And by the end of the film, you're left wondering, like, who is this for? Like, there are parts of this film that I would show my child. There are other parts that I would not show them. There are plenty of human characters I would not expose them to in this.
Well, I'd say even the cute stuff in this movie is grotesque. The scenes with Tommy the child and his alien friend, like, playing around and doing telekinesis parties in the bedroom and making, like, the toys dance on the ceiling and stuff. Something about that is its own kind of horror, even though I don't think that part is intended to be scary.
Oh, I thought it was delightful. Tommy is absolute goodness and sweetness, and so is Trumpy. Trumpy is the name that Tommy gives to the childlike alien who comes into his life.
So in a way, this movie is going to be in the tradition of all the movies where a child befriends a benevolent fantastical being. Think about the movie that was the direct inspiration for at least half of this, Spielberg's E.T. came out the year before. But on the other hand, I think you can think of this as part of a subgenre of, though it's not exactly correct in this movie, because the horror is being done by just other aliens that look identical to the one he's befriended, but it's part of the subgenre of child befriends a deadly monster movies. Like, I think one of the core prototypes here is the original 1931 Frankenstein, the Universal monster movie, where there is a pivotal scene highlighting the creature's moral innocence as well as his destructive power. After the creature escapes Frankenstein's lab, he wanders the countryside where he encounters a child, and the creature being innocent and childlike himself, they play games together and they throw flowers in a lake until the creature accidentally kills the child while in the midst of a game because he doesn't understand cause and effect and he doesn't understand his own strength. And that's sort of what makes Frankenstein more of a grotesque tragedy than a movie about a sadistic evil monster. I don't know if that's exactly the case in Extraterrestrial Visitors. I'm not sure if this movie was trying to say anything about like the moral complexity of the beings and their relationship to humans. The child in the movie does often say they just want to be our friends. Yet we do see the aliens totally unprovoked just attacking humans.
I don't know if they're completely unprovoked. Now, to come back to Frankenstein, I think Frankenstein is a great comparison here, because the other aspect of Frankenstein, and this is present in the novel too, is that Frankenstein's monster, rather, and you can call him Frankenstein. It's fine. We checked. He's cool with it. The monster encounters a humanity that is hostile to him, and that fosters hostility, that fosters this grudge against both his creator and the creator's fellow human beings. And so in this film, we kind of see the same duality. Like this, we also see that Frankenstein, you know, with the child, encountering the child or encountering the blind man, because we have these two aliens, and they both have... they have different experiences with the humans they encounter. The first alien encounters poachers and hunters and vile band members and so forth. Like his first encounters with humans are all murderous. Meanwhile, the second younger alien, his first encounter is Tommy, and Tommy like hatches him from an egg. Tommy is nice to him and feeds him, and they venture off into a world of whimsy with each other. Where the other one, the murderous alien, has none of that.
Oh, I think I see what you're saying. So like, even though the other alien does like just randomly attack like innocent people, like in a bathroom or in an RV, it is because the other alien had previously encountered dangerous humans.
Right. Yeah. Like at that point, he's like, this is what humans are. And if I see one, that I have no other choice but to kill them before they hurt me. Like he's walking around with he has a crossbow bolt in his chest most of the time, because he's mm-hmm. also been wounded by the humans. So this was, for me, the most interesting thing about this film, watching it for the first time without any riffs, without the added layer of overt humor provided by MST3K, because I'd seen this film multiple times before via that MST3K episode, which is one of my favorites. It's a classic MST episode, but I'd never really given the film a chance to succeed and fail on its own merits, and it does both. Now, I do want to come back to the title of this film, because this is it's interesting that it has so many titles. So it was a French-Spanish co-production, and so it was released in its respective countries with, of course, French and Spanish names. I believe the Spanish is what, Los Nuevos Extraterrestres, which is the new extraterrestrials. And then the French, and French is not my certainly not my happy spot for pronunciation, but I believe it is L'Éclosion des Monstres. So it's that's terrible, I know, but I love what it means, the hatching of monsters. I think the hatching of monsters might be the best title for this film,
because they do come from eggs. One egg is snuggled by a child in his bed, and the other egg is the other egg bashed open by a poacher? I'm not sure.
Multiple eggs are bashed open, yeah, by poachers. We have poachers who are seeking eggs in the forest, so the egg trope goes pretty deep in this. But yeah, this has had a ton of titles. We mentioned Pod People. You can look up all sorts of crazy posters and VHS box art for this thing, and like I found one that just says Visitor, and there's a weird illustration of Tommy, and there's the shadow of something standing in a doorway, presumably the alien visitor, which looks nothing like anything in the film.
No, the shadow kind of looks like the silhouette of the Guyver. You know, it's like a it's like a kind of robo alien humanoid shape with claws.
And then there's another one I found, and I love this one. This is a Black Box Video release, and this must be like U.S. or Canadian. I don't know. I didn't look this up, but it has this wonderful, charming, childlike illustration of Tommy and Trumpy, and it just says ETV in gold swirling letters. That's extraterrestrial visitors, but for the cool kids, ETV.
It's like T2.
Yeah. You know, I love it. Yeah. Like, how did they think they could get away with that? Let's just call it ETV. Let's just cut straight to it. The kids don't care.
This is G2, baby.
But Trumpy's very cute on this. I would say, in general, we're talking about ET, Trumpy. Trumpy is far cuter than ET. ET is just a flesh bag with big eyes and a glowing finger. But meanwhile, Trumpy is this delightful mix. He's like all the better aspects of Alf combined with Snuffleupagus in a more bipedal form.
What is the Star Wars character that Trumpy looks like from the Mos Eisley Cantina that has a long aardvark snout?
Oh, yeah, I forget his name, but yes, he does look like him, especially at one point in the film when Tommy puts a coat on him with a hood.
Garindan, is that right?
If you say so. I guess he also looks a little bit like Max Rebo, the blue piano player from Jabba's Barge, though, of course, Trumpy has hair.
Yes, okay. So according to, is this Wikipedia or some kind of Star Wars wiki? This creature with the goggles, the hood, and the long snout is called Garindan, also called Long Snoot. It says it was a Kubaz, I think that is an alien species, and he is considered to be the greatest spy in the Mos Eisley spaceport.
There you go. I mean, you barely notice him, you know. You had to look up his name. That's the mark of a good spy.
But a big difference is that Trumpy is furry, whereas Garindan is not.
You don't want to carry all that fur with you on Tatooine, though. Perhaps he had himself sheared first.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the human characters describes the aliens as looking like a cross between, I think they're saying a pig and a bear, though it kind of sounds like a pig and a pear. Either way, I'm not sure. I don't really see the pig part.
Yeah, yeah. The snout doesn't look very pig-like. It's more of Snuffleupagus is what I think.
Yeah. I wonder if that line was written before the creature design was finalized.
Maybe so. All right. At this point, we would normally give you a little taste of the trailer, but I looked around for a while, and I could not find any trailers for this film in any language. I was looking up the various releases. I was thinking, well, okay, I can't find the English trailer. Maybe there wasn't one, or it's been lost, but surely I can find the English or the original one that they used in Spain. But I was not able to find anything, so I thought we might just have some audio from the film. Hopefully we'll get some of the charming synth music in there as well.
Where are you? Trumpy! Hey, come back down!
Tommy, what are you doing? What was all that noise? Tommy? Did you hear me, Tommy?
Come on, quickly. Hide in there.
All right, and a note on availability for this film. Sadly, this is not one where you can seem to be able to find a better cut of the film, or at least like better film quality. I ended up streaming it via Prime, and I know there are some other streams available out there. Again, if you look around in the for the original Spanish and French titles for the film, I believe you can find it in those languages. But in terms of finding like any kind of restored footage, we're not there yet. So I don't know if this is a film where this is as good as the video quality is ever going to get, or if at some point we'll get something a little easier to watch. Because yeah, it's kind of brutal at times. It's a film that already has a lot of fog machines and perhaps some day for night effects going on, and things get really muddy looking.
The woods in this movie often look like the foggy forest that that Graham Chapman gets lost in, and where they find the knights who say knee in Monty Python and the Holy Grail. You remember that sequence?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, this film makes great use of the fog machine. So so sadly, we're still waiting on a proper, like, restored cut of this film. I hope we get there. I hope that it's out there somewhere, just waiting for someone to discover. But I think for now, as far as I know, we don't really have a superior example of video quality to steer you towards. I know it came out on DVD, but I have no reason to suspect that that has better video quality than what's available elsewhere. All right, let's talk about the human beings that made this film. So we have we've mentioned the director of this film before. He's come up because, especially when we've talked about Spanish films, inevitably some of the people involved in Spanish productions also worked on some of his films. This is Juan Piquer Simón. He was the director, the writer, and he also did visual effects on this film.
Hmm.
He lived 1935 through 2011, Spanish B-movie director who became, I'm going to say he became legendary for such films as 1988's Slugs the Movie, which is a film that I distinctly remember seeing a trailer for when I was a child, and it made me afraid to use a toilet. It made me anxious about sitting on a toilet. That's how terrifying the trailer was, because there's a scene where you see slugs crawling on a toilet.
Oh, there's a toilet attack in it, or mm-hmm. just slugs on a toilet?
I can't remember. I think, no. You know, we talked about the trailer for Slugs the Movie at some point for Trailer Talk back in the day, but I don't think I could quite bring myself to watch it in full.
Is that one of the movies, kind of like the late 70s remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which is fantastic, where the hero is a member of the local health inspection department?
Is that so? Okay.
I have a vague memory of something like that. Could be wrong.
Hmm. Simone's other film of note is 1982's Pieces. This is a film that we've almost watched on Weird House before. It's been almost queued up in the past. It is a chainsaw movie with a lot of other extra strange things added to it. But it has a really fun cast.
It seems kind of like if Texas Chainsaw Massacre was not rural and Texan, but was about like an apartment building.
Yeah, like an apartment building in Madrid or something.
Yeah, it's kind of odd.
So we may come back to that one. Simone also directed the 1990 underwater sci-fi film The Rift. That one has Ray Wise and R. Lee Ermey in it. He also did 1979 Supersonic Man. That has Cameron Mitchell in it. He did 1981's Mystery on Monster Island that has Terrence Stamp and Peter Cushing in it. And he also did 1992's Cthulhu Mansion.
Oh, I'd love to see what Juan Piquer Simón does with Terrence Stamp, General Zod.
Yeah, I'm curious. So there's also another writer credited on this, Joaquin Grau, who's credited as Jack Gray on the U.S. version. A writer who worked with Simone on a couple of his other films, so I couldn't find out much about this individual. But let's get into the cast a bit here. So really, most of these cast members were people I was not familiar with, but there's one that has come up on the show before, and that is the character Bert, one of the hunters, one of the poachers in the film, played by Frank Brana, who lived 1934 through 2012. Not really a major character in this film, but a regular player in Simone's films, and he also turns up in a ton of Spanish B-movies of the day, including Return of the Blind Dead, which we previously covered on the show.
He, in this movie, looks like a cross between Sam the Eagle and Leslie Nielsen. He has kind of silver-haired authority, and yet he's just playing kind of a scummy poacher.
Yeah, I think he played a lot of heavies in his time. He shows up in spaghetti westerns and horror movies. He has those really piercing eyes, often white hair, and also seemed to be able to grow a lot of impressive facial hair. So if you look up just images of Frank Brana in different movies, he's a little chameleon-like. He can play any kind of suspicious sort of handsome dude with really piercing evil eyes. It looks like he made a career out of that.
Wait, who was he in Return of the Blind Dead? Was he a Was he like one of the corrupt politicians or something?
He was, if memory serves, he was the corrupt politician's henchman think is decent for a while and not as bad as the politician, but eventually reveals himself to be a predatory villain as well. And then he's, you know, killed by the dead. All right. Other humans in this film, we have the character Rick, who's the frontman of a horrible band. This is played by Ian Serra. Dates unknown, Spanish actor, known mostly for this film, for Pieces, for Mystery on Monster Island. So, you know, he was a regular player for Simone. But he's recently directed and produced, it looks like. In this he plays Rick, a perfectionist lead singer of a terrible band that makes everyone around him miserable.
It's like they're setting him up to be the villain of the movie. He's like the jerk who, you know, will finally get his comeuppance from the monster in the end. But no, it seems like in the end, you realize that he is sort of the hero of the movie. It's very weird.
But he doesn't really do much that's heroic. Like, he doesn't really have an arc. He doesn't have a redemption story. He doesn't realize that he was a jerk. He just kind of... he stops actively being terrible, but he doesn't really do anything all that good. I guess he's a little heroic, but for movie heroism, it's very mild.
Oh, no, I'm not saying he does anything qualitatively heroic. I'm saying he fills the hero slot in the movie. Like, he is the young guy who comes in at the end, you know, and like shoots the monster and stuff.
Yeah. In that regard, you could say he's definitely filling the space that should be occupied by a more heroic figure.
But no, yeah, complete jerk of a character, essentially no redeeming qualities. The only thing that changes really at the end is he just sort of like stops having lines. And
yeah.
I guess there that, you know,
well, that's an improvement. That much is a blessing. Yeah.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. I'm Abby, a mother of two, and I had these battles myself. Endless excuses, delay tactics, and many tears and tantrums. But I've created a solution. The perfect kids podcast that makes bedtime a dream. It's called Koala Moon, and it's hosted by me, Abby. With over 300 episodes packed with original stories and sleep meditations, Koala Moon makes bedtimes easy and enjoyable. Episodes start out engaging and really rather magical, but as they progress, they gently slow to a calm and relaxing pace to have your little ones out like a light. Since launching in 2022, Koala Moon has helped with over 20 million nights' sleep and received over 6,000 five-star reviews. Win back your evenings. Listen to Koala Moon now on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What does optimism look like? I'm on a quest to find the people who inspire us to dream more and do more. I'm Simon Sinek, and I host a podcast called A Bit of Optimism. I talk to all sorts of people, from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to a hairdresser on Instagram who gives out free haircuts to the homeless, from the CEOs of the world's largest companies to the comedy writer who visited the wreckage of the Titanic. I love talking to leaders, artists, authors, and eccentrics about life, leadership, purpose, mental fitness, human skills, high performance, and other curious things. It leaves me feeling wiser, more inspired, and, well, more optimistic. Because after all, this is a bit of optimism. The world is full of magic and wonder, if you know where to look for it. Listen to A Bit of Optimism on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's see, another human of note in this. There's Nina Ferrer playing Sharon, a member of the band, and Rick's girlfriend, dates unknown, a Spanish actor who appeared in a handful of films, and this might be the best well-known, at least outside of Spain, as far as I can tell. Then there's also Susanna Biker, who plays Laura, a fan of the band. Laura is also, mild spoiler, she will be one of the early victims in the film. But kind of a victim of both human, more of a victim of the humans, right? As opposed to the aliens. At any rate,
It's confusing because I thought that her death is caused by humans, but then she gets the little the Big Dipper inscribed on her forehead, which suggests she was killed by the alien. So I don't know.
All right. We'll have to suss that out. At any rate, Biker here, Spanish actor, mostly active and still active on television. For instance, she's currently in a show called Now and Then, which is apparently on Apple TV Plus. And she had a small role in Hostel 2 as an Italian translator. And she is, according to her online acting profile, fluent in English, Italian, and French.
Oh, speaking of, do you have any idea whether the actors who appear on screen also provide the voices in the audio dub? I wondered if there was any difference there, because I think most or all of this movie does not have live sound. The dialogue is dubbed in.
Right. So, yeah, my understanding, and I could be wrong on this, is that, it was a French-Spanish co-production. And I think lines were recorded for both a French version and a Spanish version, but I don't know if both of those, if we're talking about two different takes in two different languages. I don't know if we're talking about one is the live take and the other is the dub, or as is sometimes the case with films of this caliber, if both were dubbed and they didn't do sound. I don't know. All right, we mentioned Tommy already. Tommy, the heart and soul of this film, the sweetness of this film, this film's hope for humanity, played by Oscar Martin, born 1972, a French child actor who I think would have been like 10 or 11 at the time of filming, which coincidentally is the age of my son. So I think that's why this film had more of an effect on me watching it. This time, as opposed to the past, because like here's this child that is still has all of this innocence in him, and he's into cute animals and caring for animals and nature, and he has this goodness in him, and there's a lot of that reminds me of my own son, and there's also this this fear of them growing ever older, getting closer and closer to that world of teenagedness and adulthood and all of the complexities of all of that. So I think all of this made me think a little bit deeper about this film and read more into this film than I did in the past.
Oh, okay. This is explaining a lot. Yeah. I suspect your son would make better decisions than Tommy does.
I don't know. We'll see. What is Tom? Well, we'll get into it. I'm trying to remember what Tommy's worst decisions are.
Well, I don't know. Now that I think about it, I mean, maybe Tommy, it's hard to blame Tommy too much. I think of him as essentially kind of unleashing an alien horror on everyone, but he doesn't, it's not so much his fault.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say he increases the amount of entanglement between the people and the aliens, but maybe that was inevitable.
Yeah. Martin here playing Tommy is good, though. I enjoy him. I feel like he's a good, he does a good job as a child actor in this. And in the English dub, I don't know for certain, but we kind of have that same thing going on that we had with The House by the Cemetery, where I think we might have an adult woman dubbing the voice for Tommy, which adds to the sort of weirdness of the whole situation.
Yep, yep, yep. What was the kid in House by the Cemetery? Was that Bob?
Bob, yes.
Yeah.
At least this time, a proper child's name, right? Tommy? That sounds like a child's name. Bob, that's a grown-up's name, right? All right, a couple of other actors of note. There are numerous actors. There are really too many human characters in this because the band and has just multiple members and hangers-on, some of which have no real impact on the plot. But Tommy, as we learn, Tommy lives with his mom, whose name is Molly, played by Concha Cuetos, born 1944, Spanish actor who worked mostly in TV and was also in Slugs. And then we have... And then Tommy's Uncle Bill lives with them. Uncle Bill is played by Manuel Pereiro, who was born in 1927, a Cuban-born Spanish actor, I believe, who has a fairly diverse filmography, having appeared in movies that also feature the likes of John Finch, Steve Guttenberg, Alan Arkin, Leonard Nimoy, Julian Sands, Paul McGann, and Paul Naschy.
Of course, Paul Naschy.
Yeah.
I'm going to get tripped up a lot when we're talking about the plot because this is Uncle Bill, but I was definitely just thinking of him as Grandpa. So he is Grandpa to me.
Yeah. And he's awful. He's just a grumpy man who distrusts everyone, hates animals.
He really hates Carl Linnaeus.
Oh yeah. So as we'll discuss, Bill, Uncle Bill is not a likable character. All right, and finally, the music. The music is definitely, I think, one of the best attributes of the film. The music here was done by Libre Pastor. Pastor worked on a handful of Simone films, including Pieces, a Spanish organ player and composer. He was apparently a member of the band Los Roberts, and the soundtrack was released on vinyl in Spain. So some of these films we end up talking about, we're like, oh, what if they ever put this out on vinyl? Wouldn't that be cool? This is one where it came out on vinyl originally. I don't think anybody's put it back out on vinyl. I don't know that it's available anywhere officially, like as a digital version. I don't think it ever came out on like cassette or CD, but it came out on vinyl, and the cover is pretty great because it has this wonderful illustration of Tommy looking up into the sky, and there's like a halo of light behind him.
Los Nuevos Extraterrestres. So comb your local used record store. If you find a copy, write in.
This has got to be worth a fortune, at least to certain very specific individuals. But anyway, the music in this is pretty fun. The score, anyway. Lots of synth, very atmospheric at times, also very goofy and carnival-esque at times. Mm-hmm. I remember in the MST3K episode, they distinctly made, I think they made a Music from the Hearts of Space joke in there because it does have that kind of feel at times.
Did this person, though, also write the pop song that is the diegetic music within the movie? It is the song the band sings in the studio?
I do not know about that. I don't think that awful track, which is known as Idiot Control now, among MST3K fans. I don't think that's on the score album here. And I did note that on IMDb, there's another individual credited as well for music. And so perhaps that individual had something to do with the creation of that track. I'm not sure.
I think outside the context of MST, the song is actually called Burning Rubber Tires, which is a
really
wonderfully attractive name. But I would say this is actually, it makes for one of the all-time great MST skits. You watch MST and like a lot of times the skits aren't the best part, but the skit in the Pod People episode where they sing a parody of this song it's got to be top three ever on the show.
Oh, yeah. Joel does a spoof of it and it's tremendous. Definitely, this is a situation where watching it unriffed, I still had the echo of a number of the riffs in my mind as I was watching it.
Steady as she goes, we're flying over trout.
Yeah.
Except the weird thing is, I thought some of the lines they sang in their version that were just, that I assumed were just straight parody, are literally the lines in the real song. Like, All I Want to Feel Is the Wind in My Eyes, which is hilarious, is actually the lyric.
I think it is, yeah. That just sounds insane. Like, if I'm feeling the wind in my eyes, I probably need some goggles.
Yeah.
That's going to dislodge a contact lens.
Okay, you ready to talk about the plot?
Let's get into the plot.
All right, how many movies have we watched recently? I feel like this is a really common opening motif. We open on a starfield. We're just looking at space.
Yeah.
This has got to be like, I don't know, at least 4 out of the last 7 movies we've done.
Yeah. And I feel like this one especially is kind of an example of how not to do it logically. I feel like if you want a logical example of how to do it, look at something like John Carpenter's The Thing, right? Mm-hmm. Where we have starfield, object entering Earth's atmosphere, and then we pretty much cut to stuff on Earth. We don't go back to space.
Oh my God.
We're never just stuck in space without any hint of action going on.
But there's something I do like about this opening, actually, that's a little more stylish than I think most of the film is, which is the bass beat star. There's kind of a pulse, a beat in the soundtrack that is synchronized to the flaring of a star in the middle of the void. And and then, of course, we see after that there's a big explosion. I guess that's supposed to be a supernova or something. I don't know. But then there's like a hunk of something flying through space toward the camera. And I got to say, from what I recall, this is completely different from the opening that I remember from the version of the movie that's used in the Mystery Science Theater episode, which I recall was grainy slow-mo footage from a totally unrelated movie.
Yeah, the Film Ventures International version, that's where we got the title Pod People. That was based out of Atlanta, by the way, back in the 70s. But the version they put out on, I assume, VHS, that they used footage from Don Dollar's 1985 film Galaxy Invader in the opening. Don Dollar, of course, is the guy who did Night Beast.
Yeah. I've seen Galaxy Invader. Galaxy Invader and Night Beast have some things in common. Both of them are about an alien that crash lands somewhere in like rural Maryland and then runs around scaring people.
Yeah. Yeah, we really need to do one of his films at some point. They're all basically all the alien films anyway. And he has like, what, 3 or 4 of them. They're all essentially the same plot. They have different alien or different aliens in them, but they're always enjoyable.
One thing I remember about Night Beast is the titular beast has a really cool like shiny suit. It almost looks like a suit like a cool like singer from the 70s would wear, like in a disco band or something.
Oh yeah, he does have a shiny suit, doesn't he?
But okay, that's the opening which name are we even using to call it? Extraterrestrial Visitors. And then we go down to Earth, and we're looking at the woods of Fog and Bog. We are in Fog and Bog territory. The atmosphere, again, it kind of reminds me of those misty woods with the Knights Who Say Knee. It's very atmospheric. In fact, like, you could imagine some of these environmental shots being kind of cool in a better movie. Like, the atmosphere is not bad. It just doesn't segue into very compelling action. Instead, what we get is, like, 3 poachers kind of bumbling about arguing with each other. And it's like, are we here? Are you sure? Are you sure you're sure? And I think they're trying to steal eagle eggs or something.
Yeah, they're like fumbling around for a ladder. They're scaling a tree. And they have what they claim to be like $3,000 worth of eggs that they've stolen, like $3,000 worth of eggs they're going to sell on the black market. I was wondering if they might be Fabergés. I don't know.
What is the market for eagle eggs? Do people want to cook them and make eagle omelets? Are people trying to hatch eagles? What's the deal?
I don't know. But the bottom line is, at the very least, when we meet these 3 poachers, they have no respect for nature. All they see is profit, and they're going to break the rules. They're going to break all rules of law and man and alien to get what they want.
They are bad dudes. And then we zoom out again. It's like, I'm tired of Earth. Let's go back to space. And so we just see like auroras of weird energy in space. And we see the Earth from orbit and all kinds of stuff going on. And then we come back and then they're like, okay, you saw that. Now let's go back to Earth. Here's a kid in bed, and he gets up out of bed to scold his cat. He's talking about, like, naughty kitty. I don't remember why the kitty is naughty.
It's just where it's not supposed to be. I think it got up to move around. Okay. So he's like, all right, going to take the kitten back to bed. This is our introduction to Tommy, a child of absolute goodness who loves animals and nature, whose room is home to roughly 100 different species that he's caring for. They're not only his charge, they are his friends. Uh-huh. Oh, he is just childhood innocence. He is biophilia incarnate. He's just utter sweetness and an example of what humanity could be on this world or in the universe at large. Only likable human in the picture.
Yeah, beautiful, wide-eyed innocence and curiosity. A stark contrast to the grumbling evil of the poachers.
Right.
And then, but let's go check in with the poachers again. So something crashes to Earth. The poachers, I think they're hanging out at a campfire, but they're like, well, let's go investigate. And one of them stumbles into the crash site, and it is a cave of glowing red fog. That's kind of weird. But he goes inside, and the cave is full of eggs. I don't know why, but for some reason, he's like, I got to bash all these eggs. I got to smash them. So he gets a stick, or is it a stick or a hammer? He's just start bashing all the eggs for no reason.
Yeah. It's awful because he happens upon this holy grotto of extraterrestrial eggs, and his immediate reaction is just to start smashing them all, just like must destroy all of these eggs. And you're like, no, don't do it. And he just keeps doing it.
But oh no, there is something in the cave of glowing fog that does not like the egg bashing endeavor. We get a POV of some kind of creature that comes out from around a corner and attacks and kills the poacher dude.
Yeah, this is creature number one, which I guess we're to think of as an adult creature or a mature creature of this species that it was maybe already aboard this ship or this or whatever, or this piece of its planet, whatever the details may be concerning this thing that has crashed with eggs on it. But it's kind of, I guess, kind of an egg guardian. I don't think it's supposed to be the mother, because we later get some testimony from Trumpy, creature number two, in which he's asked where its mother is, and he like points to the stars or points at a constellation on a map or something. So it's just another creature, a mature individual from this species.
It may be Trumpy's brother or sister, but it is not his parent. But we're getting ahead of ourselves because we haven't met Trumpy yet.
Right. Trumpy's still in the egg because not all of the eggs are smashed. It will turn out later.
Right. Most of them are smashed. So then we follow the poachers some more. And I'm confused about what they're doing at this point, because at first they were stealing eagle eggs, but then it shows them like aiming rifles at deer. So do they just also happen to be hunting deer at the same time they are poaching eggs?
It's confusing because at first I thought, oh, I guess they're going to shoot deer, because they at one point they're like, the white-haired one, the Frank Brana character, he's like, well, we got to get out of here. This feels weird. There's something weird in the forest. Let's move. But then they seem to stop to consider shooting some deer. So maybe they're not in that big of a hurry. And then they stop to camp. So I guess they're not in a huge hurry after all. And then there are all these scenes where Brana is using the rifle to just look at things and look at people doing things. So he's just like aiming his high-powered hunting rifle at just random people in the forest.
It's like the cop in Plan 9 from Outer Space who just points his gun at people whenever he's talking to them.
Yeah.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. I'm Abby, a mother of two, and I had these battles myself. Endless excuses, delay tactics, and many tears and tantrums. But I've created a solution. The perfect kids podcast that makes bedtime a dream. It's called Koala Moon, and it's hosted by me, Abby. With over 300 episodes, packed with original stories and sleep meditations, Koala Moon makes bedtimes easy and enjoyable. Episodes start out engaging and really rather magical, but as they progress, they gently slow to a calm and relaxing pace to have your little ones out like a light. Since launching in 2022, Koala Moon has helped with over 20 million nights sleep and received over 6,000 five-star reviews. Win back your evenings. Listen to Koala Moon now on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What does optimism look like? I'm on a quest to find the people who inspire us to dream more and do more. I'm Simon Sinek, and I host a podcast called A Bit of Optimism. I talk to all sorts of people, from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to a hairdresser on Instagram who gives out free haircuts to the homeless, from the CEOs of the world's largest companies to the comedy writer who visited the wreckage of the Titanic. I love talking to leaders, artists, authors, and eccentrics about life, leadership, purpose, mental fitness, human skills, high performance, and other curious things. It leaves me feeling wiser, more inspired, and, well, more optimistic. Because after all, this is a bit of optimism. The world is full of magic and wonder, if you know where to look for it. Listen to A Bit of Optimism on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
But let's go back to the house. So we check in with Tommy. He is, we find out more about his innate curiosity, because he is examining a centipede under a microscope, and he's looking at all the little legs and the overlapping plates and the body segments and the parts. And you can tell how much he just loves learning about the natural world. But the fact that he's looking at a creature under a microscope, this leads to conflict with the guy I was thinking of as Grandpa, but this is Uncle Bill. Uncle Bill apparently does not like the book learning. It is witchcraft.
Yeah, that's right. It's mentioned that it's a centipede, and Tommy gives supposedly the scientific classification for the species, yeah. And Uncle Bill just hates this. He's like, no, it's a centipede to me. We call that a centipede. And is just heated over it. Heated. This man is awful. And even Mom is not much help. She's like, well, it's dirty. It's like, it shouldn't be in here. Like, there's just, like, Tommy has all this sweetness and innocence and curiosity, and it's just like Uncle Bill's just pounding it into the dirt to the best of his ability.
There is far more bacteria on Uncle Bill than there is on the centipede. Come on.
Yeah. Plus, you should be so lucky as to have this beautiful predator in your house hunting other pets, especially if it were a house centipede, which is spread with humanity around the world and are especially known for preying on all sorts of things you don't want in your house, like bed bugs, for example, or cockroaches. Mm. So, yeah, like, you want a house centipede around.
Okay, finally, we get to the band, or the, what do you call that? I guess when I think of a band, I think of people who play instruments. This is a singing group, a group of singers?
Oh, yeah. None of them are actually playing an instrument, right? There's just...
Right. They're just singing over a pre-recorded track. So we see them recording in the studio. They're flying over Trout. And by this point, we've essentially established the three-movie formula. I know Mystery Science Theater also... thought about the movie this way, but it makes a lot of sense. You got movie A, which is the poachers, movie B, which is the child with pets, and then movie C, which is the singing group.
Yeah, this toxic bunch of band members and their various hangers-on and producers, they're just awful. Like this whole scene, like they're doing this terrible number, and Rick is just a perfectionist, an abusive perfectionist about the whole thing. He's like, it's awful, it stinks, we're taking it from the top. Like you get the impression that he's one of these guys who's like, we're going to do 500 takes of this scene until we get it. We're going to keep doing this track until we're exhausted, until we get it right. And of course, they're not scaling Mount Everest here. We heard the song. We know that it is absolutely garbage.
Yeah, thinking of other people who do ridiculous excessive numbers of takes, I think of like Stanley Kubrick or something. Mm-hmm. And not that this makes that behavior acceptable, because I mean, even then I think it could be considered wildly excessive, abusive to the cast and stuff. But at least with Kubrick, you end up with a good movie.
Yeah, it's one thing if you're talking about someone who also has a reputation for high quality work. Like, I want to say that there are similar tales about Dr. Dre being very perfectionist when it comes to producing tracks and all.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, do you have a Dr. Dre produced track? Do you have a Stanley Kubrick directed film? No, you have Idiot Control now.
This is the wind in my eyes.
Yeah.
But okay, so they sing the song, and then Rick, the lead singer, is hideously abusive to all of the other singers, and then they're all going to pile into an RV and go up to the mountains for the weekend.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Everybody's
sounds great.
Getting along great. Let's take this to a crowded camper and head out to a crowded cabin somewhere.
Oh, and then there's conflict over the fact that, so they like open up the door to the RV. It's like, well, we all hate each other and we've been fighting, so let's go on a, you know, spend the weekend in the woods. And they open the door to the RV, and then here is like a lady who introduces herself as Laura. They say that she is the daughter of a boss of the record label, I think. So it's like they've got to be nice to her because, you know, her dad is deciding their musical fate. But immediately this causes problems between Rick, the jerk, and his girlfriend, Sharon, because it's for some reason immediately clear that Rick and Laura, this other lady, are going to, you know, they're going to get together. And this other guy goes up to, like, the nice guy, I think his name is Brian. He goes up to the girlfriend, Sharon, and he's like, don't worry about it. He says, this is a quote, making out with chicks is part of his act as an artist. Smooth, very smooth.
Just everyone in this group is awful, or they're enabling of awfulness. It's fantastic.
Oh, but also it works. He says that and she's like, yeah, you're right. But okay, you know, so let's go on a road trip with people we hate. And then there's a lot of driving scenes. We see them going up and down roads in the RV and winding along while the music plays.
Yeah, more time is spent getting these characters to the countryside than getting that space rock from its origin to the Earth.
Meanwhile, we got to check in with Tommy, and here's where things really start to cook, because Tommy runs off into the woods, and he stumbles across the glowing red cave, and he goes inside into the red fog, and he sees a dead man with LED lights on his forehead in the pattern of the shape of the Big Dipper. And then Tommy's like, oh, there's a dead man with the Big Dipper on his head. Better steal one of these alien eggs. Now, I want to ask, this is a recurring motif where people in the movie who are killed by the aliens end up with the Big Dipper on their forehead in lights. And I'm wondering, number one, why does that happen? And number two, how does that happen?
Yeah, I have a lot of questions about this, too. Later on, Trumpy indicates that this is his home constellation. Like, this is where his mother is. So I guess alien number one, the non-Trumpy, is killing people, or in some cases perhaps finding dead people and writing the constellation on their forehead, or making it appear with phosphorescent spores or something. Who knows what the xenobiological rationale is here. But I'm not sure why it would do this. Is it like, it would be like us writing Earth on dead aliens that we killed. It I mean, I understand they want to go home, but you're not going to achieve that by just riding home on the forehead of your victims. So I'm not sure. I guess it's one of these things that don't overthink it. It looks kind of cool. It's kind of a neat effect. It just doesn't make a tremendous amount of sense.
All right. I won't overthink it. From now on, that's just what happens. So, Tommy grabs one of these eggs. He's like, well, I'm going to take this back home.
Maybe it's religious. Maybe it's like we're thinking it's something bad, but as we later learn, like these aliens, they just want to be our friends. Maybe this is like last rites for them.
Huh? Yeah. Well, so here's a thing we're thinking about. An alien from the direction of the constellation of the Big Dipper would not see, like, it itself would not look up into the sky and see the Big Dipper as the Big Dipper. That is a feature of our perspective mm-hmm. from Earth. So if it were doing this in some ritual way, it would have to be sort of for our benefit or in an Earth-directed sense. You know what I mean? Like, that wouldn't be a native piece of imagery for them.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, in that case, it doesn't make any sense. Sorry, Trumpy. I can't help you.
But anyway, so Tommy takes the boy home, and we're going to have some good times with the egg. He sneaks the egg into his bedroom. He talks to his animals. I think his mom's like, Tommy, what were you out? You know, what were you doing out there? And Tommy lies. He says, Kitty was meowing. I thought he was hungry. But then after mom goes away, Tommy tells all of his other animals, you just wait and see, you're going to have a new friend soon. And then the kid goes to sleep hugging the egg. So sweet. Now back to the kids, the people in the RV, the singers, they're up to no good. They're just, again, just being nasty. Like the record executive's daughter, Laura, she goes up to Rick, the jerk in the woods, and she's like, kiss me, Rick. And he's like, well, okay. And then she immediately, in the next scene, they're like sitting around a campfire and she's taunting Rick's girlfriend, like, tell her what we did in the woods, Rick. And I don't know why they're just like absolutely unnecessarily cruel to each other in a way that doesn't even make sense as like normal types of cruelty. It's weird.
Yeah. You're just left feeling like these are all just horrible people. And I don't care if an alien kills them in the woods.
But this leads to Sharon like throwing water in Laura's face or something. And then Laura runs away. And then what did you think happened here? What I thought happened was she like saw the poachers and then got scared and fell off the edge of a cliff. But
not only saw the poachers, but one of the poachers, the non-Frank Brana poacher, and the non-egg smasher one who's dead, of course. The non-Frank Brana attempts to grab her and like abduct her or assault her or something. And so she runs away from him and then she runs off the side of a cliff and falls, seems like quite a distance. She falls enough to where she's not completely unconscious, at least.
Yeah, and so they eventually, the RV people come and find her, and they take her back to the RV, and they try to, I don't know, what is this medical scene?
Yeah, they're like, okay, she at least has a severe concussion, so let's tuck her into bed and pour liquor down her throat. So they like get a bottle of Jack Daniels or something, and they're treating it like it's a potion of greater healing or something.
But so they eventually, they're going to show up at the house, right? So they arrive at the house of Tommy's family, asking to use a phone. You know, our friend is hurt. We need to call for help. And how does the family react? Uncle Bill doesn't take kindly to strangers, of course.
Yeah, he grabs a gun. That's his first reaction to strangers at his door pleading for help. And his attitude does not improve much at all when he finds out that they're in trouble. He's just like, all right, I guess we let him in the house.
Yeah. But the phones, of course, are out. They say because of the storm, but I don't think we've seen a storm.
It's just, I guess all that fog, that just hideous fog bank that's rolled in, it's just destroying phone lines and everything else.
Here's a metal band name, Storm of Fog.
There you go. I like it.
Oh, also the road is blocked, so they can't leave. So they're just stuck here at the house. And they realize they're going to have to spend the night. And tomorrow they'll go find a radio in the ranger's cabin and then use that to call for help. So this place must be very secluded.
I noticed they didn't make much use of it, but they had a bar in this film, environment, in this cabin, that reminded me a lot of the bar in The Devil Girl from Mars.
Yes. Really well stocked. Lots of brown liquors. Yeah.
Yeah. Multiple shelves. Like, just that's an extensive liquor collection. But I don't know. We don't really see people sitting around enjoying it. I guess they just didn't have time with all that's happening here.
Meanwhile, the poachers are out camping in the woods, and oof, they're having a hard time. I thought they were going to be getting out of there, but they're just hanging around for some reason. I don't understand what the poachers are doing.
Yeah, at first they acted like they realized something was wrong and they needed to get the heck out of Dodge. But then there's no real rush later on. They're like, all right, well, I guess we're walking out of here. They seem concerned about the fact that their truck is gone, but they don't really do anything about it. They accept that the really bad poacher says, well, couldn't we steal those kids' camper? And he's like, you idiot, you can't do that. We're already doing enough crimes here. We don't need more crimes.
Yeah, it's the bearded one that wants to take the RV. The other guys, Frank Brana, is more like, oh, that'll get us into more trouble.
Yeah, we're just here to poach eggs. We're not here to kidnap. We're not here to steal vehicles. And the bearded guy's like, well, we could do all those things. We have time. Let's do those things.
But so they're camping out in the woods, and they encounter an alien. And I think this is the first time we actually get a look at what the alien body forms are like in this movie. So the alien is like sort of a furry, squat Chewbacca-style body, but much shorter. And then the head has like a pointy apex on top, and then long aardvark snout, and then pointy elf ears.
I thought this scene was rather effective, because when we see the creature here, and we have some context as well. We've seen it kill already, but it looks a little bit cute. There's some cuteness here. It's not just completely monstrous, but there's an uncanniness to it as well. And then also the lighting is very dark. The human characters here are being very cautious around it. And then another thing that I really like about the extraterrestrials in this film is the eyes they created for them are very expressive. Like, they're very glassy, like living-looking eyes that I think give them a lot of character.
But to keep up with your theory that the alien only turns murderous because it is repeatedly exposed to aggression from humans early on, so it walks up to the campfire. I don't know what its original plan is, but they start shooting it with a crossbow.
Yeah, they're kind of like the bearded guy. He's like, hey, come on in. He's trying to small talk the alien. He's offering it a big grotesque piece of meat that they've been cooking over the fire. Already kind of an unsettling display. But then Frank Brana tries to net it. They fire a crossbow bolt at it. The bolt hits the alien in the chest. So yeah, these are not good ambassadors of humanity here.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. I'm Abby, a mother of two, and I had these battles myself. Endless excuses, delay tactics, and many tears and tantrums. But I've created a solution. The perfect kids podcast that makes bedtime a dream. It's called Koala Moon, and it's hosted by me, Abby. With over 300 episodes packed with original stories and sleep meditations, Koala Moon makes bedtimes easy and enjoyable. Episodes start out engaging and really rather magical, but as they progress, they gently slow to a calm and relaxing pace to have your little ones out like a light. Since launching in 2022, Koala Moon has helped with over 20 million nights' sleep. and received over 6,000 five-star reviews. Win back your evenings. Listen to Koala Moon now on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What does optimism look like? I'm on a quest to find the people who inspire us to dream more and do more. I'm Simon Sinek, and I host a podcast called A Bit of Optimism. I talk to all sorts of people, from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to a hairdresser on Instagram who gives out free haircuts to the homeless, from the CEOs of the world's largest companies to the comedy writer who visited the wreckage of the Titanic. I love talking to leaders, artists, authors, and eccentrics about life, leadership, purpose, mental fitness, human skills, high performance, and other curious things. It leaves me feeling wiser, more inspired, and, well, more optimistic. Because after all, this is a bit of optimism. The world is full of magic and wonder, if you know where to look for it. Listen to A Bit of Optimism on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Meanwhile, back at the house, that egg's hatching. It pops open. There's a little kind of greasy, slimy little alien in there.
So cute.
It's not cute yet.
It's already cute. It's already cute. It's a slimy little like fetal elephant creature. And I don't know. I thought it was cute.
Okay. I won't argue with you. He starts feeding the alien food. It's eating a lot. It really enjoys vacuuming up milk with its snout. He names it Trumpy. I assume that's because it has a long snout, and so that is like a trumpet. I don't think that's ever made explicit, but that's what I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. It could also originate in one of the two original languages for the film. I don't know. Maybe it makes even more sense in French or in Spanish. I don't know.
But the kid's like, oh, we're going to play now that you're getting bigger. Do you know what playing is, Trumpy? And Trumpy does not know, but Trumpy will find out.
So this is the world that Trumpy is introduced to. This is the human world that he's introduced to, a world of copious amounts of food. A lot of it is breakfast cereals, toys, play, friendship, all the things that were denied to extraterrestrial one.
But remember now, this is all taking place in the same house where the RV singers are staying overnight. And apparently Laura, the record executive's daughter who fell off the cliff, she dies overnight. And they come and see her and they see something is horrible about her face. We already know what it is. It's going to be the, you know, the Big Dipper with the lights. But I guess overnight also Trumpy becomes much bigger. He grows from like the size of a little toy on the shelf to basically the same size as Tommy. And we see that this great scene that is hilarious in the Mystery Science Theater version Trumpy is just surveying the buffet of Tommy's pets, panning over the rabbits and the hamsters and the cat and all that stuff.
Yeah, they make some great riffs in that episode about him considering eating all these animals. But in this in the original film, he does not eat any of the animals. And I kind of get the sense that these are vegetarians, that they don't eat meat, which makes the earlier offering of the grotesque meat by the bearded poacher even more fitting. You know, he's like, come here, organism. Would you like some organism?
But in this scene, we also discover via interactions with a toy robot that Trumpy has telekinesis.
Oh, yes. Like, not even just a little bit. Like, not just a little bit of Carrie White, but, like, full power Carrie White. Like, full, almost godlike telekinetic powers.
Well, E.T. does, too. I think this is an E.T. Touch from E.T. Yeah.
Does E.T., like, bring the whole room to life? It's been so long since I've seen E.T.
I think so. I think there's a scene where E.T. does basically the same thing Trumpy does. Like, makes all the toys fly around and stuff.
Hmm. I feel like... Trumpy probably does it better. I feel like if I were to watch E.T. again, I would side with the Trumpy cut, because Trumpy basically uses a Simon game to cut a synth track, like this carnival synth track that starts playing. Like Trumpy does this by manipulating the Simon software.
I did not expect your take on this movie to be so anti-E.T.
I mean, E.T.'s fine. You can't hate E.T. But I also, I don't, like, I've seen E.T. like once in my life. And I've seen pod people or extraterrestrial visitors multiple times.
What else does Trumpy eat? So I'm trying to think, do they ever feed him meat? We see him suck up a bunch of milk. We see Tommy bring him, a big old thing of Planters peanuts, and you can see the label. So, I mean, Planters, surely they paid for that placement.
You know they did. It's the Reese's treatment, right?
And they do a special effect where, you know, Trumpy's snout is like a vacuum cleaner and it's sucking up all the peanuts. In this scene, we get some really good looks at Trumpy's eyes. Notice Trumpy has vertical slit pupils, like a cat.
Ooh, nice. Yeah, again, these are lovely eyes. Whoever did this costume, I feel like they kind of knocked it out of the park. I like it.
But Trumpy learns puzzles and games. He telekinetically solves a puzzle and manipulates a Simon Says thing. There's a bonding scene where Tommy is drawing, and he draws this hideous picture and says, "That's my mommy. Do you have a mommy?"
Yeah, his picture of his mom looks like a Ric Flair Pez dispenser. It's great.
Yep. It looks absolutely nothing like his mommy. Like, it's not even close, not even the same hair color. Mm-hmm. But anyway, this is the Trumpy, you can do magic things here, scene. And Trumpy turns the child's bedroom into a living nightmare of carnival music, flickering lights, dancing toys, terrorizing the pets. He sticks to the ceiling like Baron Harkonnen. It's great.
Yeah. And also his eyes glow like stars. It's pretty great.
Now, is this the scene where Trumpy says where his mommy is and points out the constellation?
I think so, because I think he shows him the picture, Tommy's picture of his own mommy, and he says, "Where's your mommy?" And he's like, he points, and Tommy's like, "Oh, your mommy, you mean the trees. Your mommy's in the trees." And he's like, "No." Trumpy points at a map of the constellations and causes one of the constellations, the one of the dippers, to glow.
Yeah. Now, exactly like in E.T., also, there's a whole thing of Tommy trying to hide Trumpy from his family, like hiding him in the closet and stuff. Obviously, this is more difficult while Trumpy is playing DJ in the bedroom.
But there's the distraction of a dead woman downstairs, so I guess that probably helps cover things up. They're not as concerned about what new animal Tommy has snuck into the house. But at one point, maybe later, but mom gets short with Tommy, and she's like, "Oh, more animals? They're all going out tomorrow."
Well, yeah,
that sounds kind of harsh, Mom. You know he loves these animals. Even I don't think she means it. Come on,
that's an empty threat.
Okay.
But meanwhile, speaking of grisly murders, Grandpa and one of the RV kids, they go off looking for the ranger station. I think this is the guy, Brian, who earlier was like, "Hey, you know, don't worry about Rick making out with other girls. That's just part of his act."
Mm-hmm.
Brian and Uncle Bill, they go to the ranger station. Uncle Bill just walks around pointing his gun at everything. And they find one of the poachers inside, but he is dead. And he's got a Big Dipper in lights on his forehead. Just like everybody else. And then one of the aliens attacks them. It seemingly kills the RV dude, and Grandpa escapes. Now, here's a question I wonder about. Are we as the audience supposed to be wondering if this is Trumpy doing the killing? Since in the scene right before this, Trumpy sneaks off and disappears. Or are we supposed to assume that this is a different alien that just looks identical to Trumpy? I think we discover it is a different alien, but I don't know if that's intentionally supposed to be an open question or not.
Yeah, I'm not sure on this because it seems like on one hand, the killing started before Trumpy hatched. So yeah. If we're just looking at the timeline of events, we can't pin all the murders on Trumpy. There has to be another primary alien out there, extraterrestrial mm-hmm. one. So I have a hard time understanding how we, the viewer, are supposed to think Trumpy might be doing this, but also it's hard to reflect on this because it's been so long since I had a fresh viewing of this. Like it seems like I've always known that Trumpy was innocent and incapable of murder.
He is blameless. Did you notice the ranger cabin in the woods here has framed portraits of Ronald Reagan on the wall?
Yeah, that made me laugh. I feel like there was, after I saw it, I have a vague recollection of there being a riff about the Gipper or something in the MST3K episode. But it is an odd inclusion because this, again, is Spain. It's supposed to be Spain, and it's filmed in Spain. I don't know why Ronald Reagan's on the wall.
So we see the alien kill another one of the band members. This is the singer Tracy. He kills her in the RV. And this time Tommy happens to be looking through the telescope down at the RV outside, I guess, to witness this. And because the aliens look the same, he thinks Trumpy is the killer. Oh no, yeah. There is a rift between them now.
Now, this is definitely the point at which, it's hard to imagine that this particular murder was itself, that it was provoked in any way. This seems to be an unprovoked killing by extraterrestrial one.
Yeah, Tracy, what, you think Tracy attacked the alien? No, I mean, Tracy's just chilling.
Yeah.
Anyway, the rest of the survivors are all holed up in the cabin. Except Tommy, for some reason, like he runs off into the bog and fog to find Trumpy. And here there is a really weird scene where there's a standoff between Uncle Bill and Rick, the jerk lead singer, where Uncle Bill's like, "Have you ever used a gun before?" And Rick says, "I don't need a gun to defend myself." And then Uncle Bill says, "Yeah, you probably pay others to defend you." And then Rick aims the rifle at Grandpa here, at Uncle Bill, and then shoots in his direction without hitting him. He like shoots a glass beside him on the bar. And then everybody's like, "Why are you shooting at Uncle Bill?" And he goes, "I don't like anyone bugging me."
Yeah, this is the act of a rational character that we're supposed to root for.
Now, Tommy comes back so he ran off into the woods, then he comes back and he finds Trumpy in his bedroom and playful, happy music is chiming. But then it begins this mad exchange between Tommy's voice. Again, this is dubbed by like an adult woman, I think, and Trumpy's various like head nods and head shakes to communicate. So the kid is saying, "Trumpy, no, stay there, stay away. Why did you kill that girl? Why did you kill that girl? Why did you do that? Now I can't be your friend anymore. Naughty Trumpy, very naughty. Now they'll kill you." but Trumpy, I think, is able to explain himself with head nods. Somehow mm-hmm. he's like, no, it wasn't me, shaking his head. And then the kid's like, "Was it someone else? Did another one do this?" And Trumpy nods. He's protesting his innocence. And so eventually I think Tommy is convinced that Trumpy is innocent. And for some reason, he dresses Trumpy up like a Jawa, like he puts a coat with a hood on over him. I'm not sure what the purpose of that is.
I guess to sneak him out of the house, but there are no other children anywhere in the vicinity in the film at all. So I don't know exactly what Tommy was hoping to pull off with this.
This is just my friend, the bipedal aardvark who wears a raincoat.
Yeah.
So we get another random alien attack, the other Trumpy species alien attacks one of the RV ladies in the bathroom. We get a mirror scare where she wipes mm-hmm. the fog off of the bathroom mirror and it's standing behind her and then it attacks. There are more scenes of Tommy and Trumpy arguing, Tommy saying that you have to hide or they'll kill you. And eventually this all comes to a head when the mother and Sharon, I think, see Trumpy. They're mm-hmm. like the kid's trying to sneak him through the house and they're like, "There, it's that monster." And Tommy tries to explain. He says, "No, it wants to be our friend. He's good. He's good. They all want to be our friends, but we won't let them." And of course the mother doesn't believe that. So Tommy and Trumpy really have no choice. They flee into the woods. And here in the woods, you think the other alien is about to sneak up on Tommy and give him what for, but Trumpy intervenes.
Yeah, we finally have extraterrestrial one and extraterrestrial two, a.k.a. Trumpy, meeting up in the woods.
Now, eventually, there's a big showdown. Uncle Bill and Rick, they shoot the other alien, the non-Trumpy alien. Grandpa is killed in this scuffle, but Rick blasts the alien to death. And then it, like, turbo buries its own body telekinetically.
Yeah, we have another self-burying monster, kind of like the some of the creatures in Crawl.
Yeah.
It's a great effect. I like it. I'd like to see more of it in my monster films.
And there's a tearful goodbye between Tommy and Trumpy. You know, it's like, they'll never accept you, Trumpy. We cannot be together. And the humans all walk off together, and Trumpy is left behind in the woods. And finally, he wanders away into the mist. You never know if he gets back to his home planet or not, or what happens to him. He just wanders away, and then roll credits, and Rick survives.
Yeah, that's the weird choice. Perhaps a product of this film probably changing its direction and priorities at some point in production.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, well, we forgot to do anything with Rick. Well, it's all right. But I have to say that the ending to this film, it got me. I teared up a bit, you know, because
wow.
The aliens, it turns out, you know, they are good. And in fact, it's not just a matter where, okay, Trumpy's good, but the other one is purely evil. Like, we have that moment where Trumpy is able to communicate with its fellow alien and it seems to maybe even convince him of some of this stuff. Like, no, okay, a lot of these humans are bad, but Tommy's cool. They have this moment. So the aliens are good. Tommy's good. Humanity itself is just hostile and violent and mean-spirited, and Tommy and Trumpy are just too good for the world. But what happens, Tommy has to push Trumpy away. He has to send him off into the woods where, you know, either he does find a way back to his home planet, or he just lives in the woods as like a wild being, like a Sasquatch for the rest of his life. And we're left wondering, like, can Tommy retain his sweetness and goodness as he continues on in this world? Is he saying goodbye not only to his friend Trumpy? Is he not only pushing Trumpy away from him, but is he pushing away his own innocence and his own hope for a sweeter world? And I think that was all going through my head here as I was tearing up watching this poor extraterrestrial being left in the foggy woods and then walking off into the wilderness.
Wow. The gospel of Trumpy.
Yeah. And we also had some very potent synth music playing over all this. So that also helped. So like I say, I'm reading a lot into this film, and also this film is, you know, it's coming in the wake of E.T. It's patterning itself off of existing media, and in doing so, it's retaining some of the inherent messages in those pictures. But I don't know. Also, maybe Simone here, you know, he was trying to get this message across. Maybe he was trying to say something about the world and about childhood innocence. I don't know. Like, I feel like the film does have a heart, you know, there's still some heart there, and what heart is there is genuine.
I wonder what, you know, what kind of new themes and possibilities emerge from a sort of a patch over job like this, because I can't remember if we already said this. I at least read about this movie. I think you may have alluded to this, that it was originally intended to be just more of a heartless kind of like alien slasher movie. It's just more like Night Beast or something. It's just about an alien that runs around killing people. And then E.T. came out and they were like, oh, we got to make this a sweet story about the bond between a child and an alien and a child's love and friendship from the hearts of space. And and trying to smash those two things together makes for such a weird product, but maybe also having some elements that would not have been achieved had it just been an attempt to create an E.T. ripoff from the beginning.
Yeah, that is a great question, because it kind of reminds me again of Gremlins, where the original Gremlins movie, by being tonally inconsistent, seems to have a core message of, hey, kids, monsters exist and there's no Santa Claus, you know, which clearly was nobody's key intention. But I think that's probably what comes. This is the kind of thing that emerges when priorities shift and the tone changes and the tone is inconsistent throughout a picture.
Every day I feel closer to doing Gremlins 2.
Oh yeah, I think it's a grand idea. I think we should make it be our Christmas episode this year. Having done ETV, we have to do G2.
No stopping it.
All right. Well, that is extraterrestrial visitors or EVP
or, of course, The Hatching of Monsters. I think The Hatching of Monsters is really good because it also, because we have different types of monsters. We have the alien monster and we have the human monsters. I think it's a good title. I kind of wish they'd stuck with that across translations. As always, we'd love to hear from anyone out there. If you have particular thoughts and memories, insight about this picture, you know, perhaps you, you know, like us, grew up watching the MST3K episode. Perhaps you have prior experience with pod people extraterrestrial visitors. Definitely write in and let us know. And hey, if you do find a superior copy of the film out there that we're not aware of, let us know. I'm hoping that if it doesn't exist now, at some point in the future, that'll be the next big one, because there are a lot of worse films that get the restoration treatment. And I'm not saying that that's bad. It's probably just a case of nobody's found superior footage from extraterrestrial visitors yet, but I hope they do. Maybe it's self-buried itself in the Spanish forest somewhere.
It wants to be found.
All right, till next time. Weird House Cinema publishes every Friday in the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast feed. We're primarily a science podcast with core episodes on Monday. No. Core episodes on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Sorry. Mondays, that's listener mail. Wednesday, that's Artifact or Monster Fact, a short form episode. And on the weekends, we do a rerun.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics, in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.